sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. 6517, need to trade anyone you can for assets. The minor league system is terrible. Abreu would not have been signed in first place if we had a legit prospect there. Crane didn't spend that money out of kindness of his heart. Probably true. You didn't have a guy ready to take over for first base. You had to make a move to bring in a first baseman. He's right about that. Mm-hmm. It's way too soon to fire sale.
We're not pulling the plug.
Way too soon to fire sale. Now, you get to early July, and we're in this spot. The Astros are five back. You're not trading pieces when you're five back. You get to July, and you're 10-12 back, and you're 15 games below 500. Okay, we'll have that conversation, and it'll be time to go all in, because whenever you're rebuilding, you go all in with a rebuild. There's no half measures with rebuilds. You do half measures with rebuilds, you end up in purgatory and mediocrity.
See, and that's what people don't understand, because you have Altuve under contract, you have Yordan under a long-term contract, so you know they're going to be there, but the reality is, they want to win, and you're as a fan, you're saying to do this, but then next year, if you don't have the kind of lineup and the kind of talent and the kind of guys that they've been used to having around them that you've been used to watching, then you're going to be pissed off too, because that's what a complete rebuild involves. That's when you start, you know, trading off pieces like that. That's the next step for you, is to take another full step or more back before you start getting back where you expect this team to be.
Yeah, I'm okay with rebuilds, but once you make the decision, you're all in. You're going all in on a rebuild, just like Jeff Luhnow did. We forget that the golden era of Houston Astro baseball was born from a rebuild. Rebuilding is fine at times, but too early. It's far too early to do that. You get to July. Okay, let's talk Bregman. Let's talk if there's any value for Presley if he had turned a season around. Maybe you're talking Fromber, only has a year and a half left on his deal at that time. Maybe you're talking Kyle Tucker, who only has a year and a half left on his deal at that time. Because you could get some good, especially for Fromber and Tucker, yep. You could get some really good prospects back that might be close to major league ready. Like, you could kind of expedite the rebuild. Worst thing that you can do is be the Carlos Lee, Miguel Tejeda, Tejada, Pudge Rodriguez Astros, where you do like this half rebuild, where you get rid of all of your best pieces, you bring in these aging veterans, you're not really, you know, filling up the minor league system, and then you're 85 and 79 every year.
You're that trying to nothing. Have a team full of fighting Rex Burkheads that has a little left in the tank.
Yeah.
And that's not going to win anything.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. There's no one in Sugarland that can take a Abreu spot. Lo Perfido had been doing good, but I think he's like one for his last 20, he's like nine strikeouts. So you're not calling him up whenever he's scuffling. Trey Cabbage would probably be a better option than Jose Abreu at this point, but that means what's the roster move there? That means you're probably DFAing John Singleton for a guy who's probably an equal to John Singleton, because Cabbage and Singleton are probably very similar, you know, offensive players in baseball. So Cabbage has some speed and some athleticism, can play some outfield a little bit too, so it gives you some positional flexibility.
But why
do you need positional flexibility? Like, he's not coming up to play left or right; he's coming up to play first.
Right.
So positional flexibility with Cabbage is overrated, unless he was a backup, which we're talking about guys who replaced the starter. Jolk's not a first baseman.
No, I know. I was just saying, just to see guys in Sugarland that might be hitting.
I don't know. I did notice he was playing right, though, which is good, because that gives him positional flexibility, because he really only played a whole lot of left.
Yeah.
But in terms of replacing Abreu, guys in the minors, those are your two, Lo Perfido, Cabbage. Lo Perfido struggling. He's not going to get the call soon, or at least immediately until he heats up again. At the minimum, and then Cabbage is pretty equal to Singleton, and you'd have to get rid of one of those guys if you called up Cabbage over Singleton, unless you found an injury for Jose Abreu, which would be great.
I think that's coming.
Strained hamstring, call up Cabbage, and then Cabbage and Singleton can battle it out for the start, which is still terrible. Like, it's still awful at first base.
He gets a hit, he sprints all the way through the bag, and then he hits the ground. And
he gets a hit. That's some good thinking there. Glass half full.
One. I'm not asking for much, just one.
It might take till next week.
One.
Are there any other options away from the team? Jared Walsh got DFA'd by the Rangers. He would be an upgrade over Abreu, but he's been mostly bad. I've been banging the table for Brandon Belt. To me, that makes sense. He's better. He's a lefty, better against righties. So you could actually platoon him a little bit with Jose Abreu if you're just hell-bent on keeping Jose Abreu on this team. And then CJ Cron's another that I've seen tossed around. I'm not crazy about Cron, but would be an upgrade.
I mean, Walsh in the past has had some good seasons, but looking at it, he's hitting .226. I mean, is that better than the two guys you have currently playing first base? Yes, but how much? Not much. He has one home run. He has seven ribbies. I, I'm I just don't know if that's your cheap version of trying another option,
yeah.
I guess. But look, I'm willing to try anything at this point because I'm sick and tired of seeing both those guys at first base.
2-1 area code. Your lineup this year sucks. Getting no runs proves that. I think it's...
Look at the hits.
And look at the OPS. But yeah. It does feel like we're making excuses for a bad offense, so or a below-average offense. I don't love doing that. Saints Patrick, will someone please just teach Jordan to play first? I've wanted this to happen for a while, and they haven't done it. I know that in the minors, he was really bad defensively at first base. I feel like they've given up on this idea. I don't think that Jordan will ever play first. I agree with you, Saints Patrick, that ideally this would make a whole lot of sense because you find a position for a guy who wants to play the field. It's a little safer than playing outfield because you're not sprinting all the time. Less likelihood of collisions, less likelihood on, you know, slipping on a banana peel on the warning track. So first base would be safer than left, but I don't think that they think he is a good enough defender to do it.
No, and, I mean, aside from getting his Achilles run up on at first base, you're right. It's a safer position to play. I'm with you. I thought that with all the comparisons to David Ortiz and the way he swings
the bat. How many times have you seen a first baseman tear their Achilles playing defense?
I'm saying we talk about the Jordan rules of protecting him. I mean, the main issue you're dealing with is if, there's a collision at first base or a guy's running down the line and ends up spiking him. But you need to worry about the big picture. If there was all these comparisons and Ortiz, who ended up being one of the greatest designated hitters of all time, but he played first base early in his career and he knew how to play first base occasionally when they needed him, you would think a guy that big, that's athletic, could figure it out and play first base. I mean, they taught Yiner on the fly pretty quickly, and Yiner was learning to be a better first baseman. It seems like down the road, it's still a possibility that he will end up playing first base at some point.
Jordan?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You don't think that?
I think they've made the decision. I hope that you're right. I hope that you're right because, like, it's natural. Like, put your big slugger at first base. He's a good enough athlete that you would think he'd pick up on it. But he was so bad at it in the minors, and they just refused to give it any thought. I feel like they've already made the organizational decision that they're not going to do it.
You get him a glove he can park two cars in like a garage, and you let him stand there and be the biggest target he can be. And he couldn't do much worse. Everybody's banging on Abreu's defense, too, anyway. He couldn't do much worse. Just, figure it out so that your offensive lineup's better.
Yeah, it makes no sense that they haven't already done it. Now, if they do ever do it, it's not going to be in the middle of a season. It would take an offseason to do it. I think the better chance of the first baseman changing positions is Yiner. I think that Yiner has the best chance of being your future first baseman than Jordan does. All right, anything that we missed here, good, bad, uglies, that y'all wanted to bring up before we move along?
I mean, I said it, but I'll echo it just to put it on the list officially, but the uglies, the injury list.
Yeah,
that IL list is just too many big names and too many necessary pieces that are sitting there. And Javier, the latest one, was one that literally came out of left field.
Yeah, that was tough news to take. Been one of your best pitchers, and he's going to be placed on the IL with a strained neck.
Kind of along those same lines, the Astros are 7-16 despite Jordan, Tucker, and Jose Altuve playing in every single game. And obviously, especially with the first two names, Altuve and Jordan, you certainly can't count on them playing even 150 games. So, the law of averages says an injury is coming for them at some point, and yet even when they're healthy, you're still 9 games under .500.
Yeah, and you feel like you're going to have to rest them at some point.
And Hader makes the bad list because even though he got a save, it took 30 pitches and it was not pretty.
It took him out
and
of Saturday.
And he gave up a run in that. Yeah,
and it took him out of his availability on Saturday.
He gave up the run quickly and still kept on throwing pitch after pitch.
Bregman was 0-11. I know we banged on him, but just the numbers. 0-11 for Bregman. 0-0 for the series. 0-0 for Washington. 0-0 for D.C. A couple of goods, though. Brian Abreu, I think, is looking more like himself. Had a couple of punchies the last time he was on the mound. Y'all mentioned Montero. Chaz had 5 hits. That's good. Like, we need you need some production from your left fielder. You're going to need some production from Chaz McCormick. So 5 hits for him. Hopefully that's a sign. And then we got to mention Ronel Blanco. 2 runs, 6 innings. I don't think he was at his absolute best, but give me 6 innings, 2 runs every single time. He's got a 1.33 ERA. He's in the top 5 in the American League in ERA. He's in, what was the other stat? I can't remember. He's been one of the best pitchers in the AL. Like, tip my cap to Ronel Blanco. He's been fantastic.
No question. Way better than anybody expected to start this season. He was supposed to be a spot starter that might find his way to the bullpen, and now he's literally been your best starter to start the season.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. All right. This texture. This will sum it up here. I was so mad I went to the batting cage and took baseballs to the chest. Name the movie.
Happy Gilmore.
There you go. A little Happy Gilmore. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Brian's going to throw out positions to us, and we're going to give Brian the earliest round we would take a specific position. I'm also going to make the case that a running back at 42 wouldn't be the worst thing on my list. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Mike Holley, U of H class of 1990. Go Cougs. He used to protect a Heisman Trophy winner. Now he's in the business of protecting businesses. In fact, he's been doing that for nearly 25 years. He's been protecting businesses for a long time, and he's the best in the business of protecting businesses. HRMP provides comprehensive human capital management services, which include HR compliance, that's important to have, benefits administration, that's important to have, and payroll, that might be the most important. HRMP will work with you to customize a plan for whatever you need. There's nothing cookie cutter about HRMP. Maybe you only need help in payroll, okay? Maybe you only need help in HR, okay? Maybe you need help all across the board, okay? HRMP has your back, and they're going to work with you to customize whatever you need to be done. Their customer service is second to none. You'll never talk to a stranger on the other side of the line. You'll be calling someone that's familiar with you. They're familiar with your company. You're going to love that customer service. I can speak to that customer service. Anytime I have a question, always a quick response, very easy to understand, whether it's email, whether it's a phone call. I usually err on the side of the emails, but still, very quick response and very, very clear as well. Let HRP take on the demands of human resources and eliminate your HR burden so you can get back to doing the things you want to do, like growing your business or other things. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HRP customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at HRP.net. That's HRP.net.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm coming around to the idea of the Houston Texans taking a running back at number 42 come Friday night, assuming they stay at 42. NFL draft coming up this week, first round Thursday, second, third on Friday. A show's on Friday with Brian, amongst others, right?
We think.
Yeah, it's Paul, Joe, Dell, and others as it's being listed on the...
Yeah, how did you feel about that, Brian?
Not great.
Here's the read, by the way.
Yeah.
We're legally obligated to do this. Joe writes these, I think. ESPN 97.5 will be your home for NFL draft coverage in 2024, exclamation point. The only place in town to hear every single first-round selection on the radio is right here. ESPN radio coverage of the NFL draft starts at 6 p.m. on Thursday. So that's the first round. We're not going to have a show there. We're just going to carry the ESPN NFL draft, which is the great stuff because... The Texans don't have a pick. On Friday, when the Texans are on the clock, we'll have our own draft show, exclamation point. Join Paul, Dell, Joe, and others for our Texans draft show from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. next Friday night.
Yeah. Others.
Others.
Yeah, Sean and I are others. So.
Yeah, they're the write-in votes.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the presidential candidate that's hoping to get 5% of the vote.
Yeah, we're hanging chads.
Yeah, you have to be talent to make the marquee.
Apparently.
You got to be talent to make the read. Paul, on a show. Dell, on a show. Joe, on a show. Brian, Mapes, are y'all on shows? There you go.
I mean, weekend.
Look, I'm not telling you that I would have written this.
You're on our show enough.
I'm not telling you that I would have written this. I'm just telling you where, you know, the method to the madness and the madness to the method.
Clearly the copy shows me where I stand. I stand amongst... Others.
I'm not saying it's my logic. I'm explaining the logic of the gentleman.
And that's what I'm saying.
Of maybe gentleman's too strong of a word, of the man who wrote this copy.
I had told him that I was available and that I could do it, and then I didn't hear anything, and then now that I've heard that, on top of then I got a text.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You think you can do some of the show on Friday? Well, you know what, Brian? I'm in solidarity with you. I don't like the way they're treating you right now.
Yeah, he asked me if I was available. I said, I don't roll out of bed for the second round, my guy. I said, first round, you need a day that lives in infamy. I'm your guy. Second round, ain't for me. I got a baseball game. All right, 713-780-ESPN.
You're not giving up game checks for that?
Absolutely not. You kidding me? All right, so I'm going to make the case for running back at number 42. Jonathan Brooks is the betting favorite to be the first running back off the board. A couple of things that... Adam Schefter said today about Jonathan Brooks, and I'm sure Brian knows a lot about him being a Longhorn.
Hook him.
There you go. He tore his ACL last November. He would have likely been the top running back selected. Schefter says that if he didn't get hurt, later portion of round one.
I thought he might be a first rounder.
To late first rounder. Jonathan Brooks, mid to late first rounder if he didn't have the knee injury. But they're saying that he's still likely for training camp. So, looks like he's going to play the entire season, ready to go. Also, when you're drafting rookies, I mean, it's a 4-year commitment. Mm-hmm. First rounders, of course, you have the 5th-year option, but that's not, you're not committed to that 5th-year. So it's a 4-year commitment. It's not a 1-year commitment. We know that the Texans have a need at running back. Yes, they brought in Joe Mixon, who was on my flight to Cincinnati. We were rubbing elbows, me back in coach, him in first class. He was actually flying back yesterday too. So you have nothing behind him. You have Damian Pierce, who I don't think they think a whole lot of Damian Pierce. He's probably more of like running back 4 than running back 2. He's closer to running back 4 than running back 2, in my opinion. So if Jonathan Brooks is on the board at 42, you have a guy who is a mid to late first round talent, and he's not because of the knee, which you don't love that, but you have Joe Mixon, you traded for him. So you can kind of ease Jonathan Brooks into the mix. Also, here's a list of second-round running backs in the last 5 years. And tell me that you wouldn't get excited with most of these guys being on the Houston Texans. Last year, there was only one, Zach Charbonnet, who landed in a weird spot. He landed in Seattle. He was backing up Kenneth Walker. I think he's going to be a fine player. Didn't really do much in his rookie year, and I think he was banged up too. 2022, there was 3 running backs taken in the second round. Breece Hall.
I was going to say,
Breece Hall. Would we like Breece Hall?
Oh, yeah.
Kenneth Walker.
Oh, yeah, Michigan State.
Would we like Kenneth Walker on this team?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other second-round running back in 22 was James Cook. How would we feel about James Cook on this football team?
Yeah, 3 for 3 that year.
3 for 3 in 2022. 2021, Denver took Javonte Williams.
Now
he's been just completely hurt, right?
Right. He
had a good rookie year.
Yeah.
He was looking great until he tore his ACL.
Yep.
And that's kind of like, and you mentioned the expectation is Jonathan Brooks would be ready for week one. And I think he would be. I think he would be a person that would be on the field. And maybe this is no longer a concern because of what you said with having Joe Mixon. He's going to take the brunt of the workload anyway. But I wouldn't expect a guy, and the same thing can't kind of happen for Breece Hall. Even if he's on the field week one, he's not going to really be his full self. It's who you're closer to that 1-year milestone from the injury, which I believe was in November for Jonathan
December,
Brooks.
He had the – well, I don't know when the injury was. You're probably right. He said they had the surgery – yeah, it was late November, and then he had the surgery December 1st.
Right.
So that's where I was going to mention the Breece Hall situation where they were bringing in Cook. They were bringing in other guys so that they could cover for Breece Hall until he was fully ready to go 100%. You have Joe Mixon. At the start of the year, he should be fresh. You don't have to rush the kid back until he's ready to perform at his best. So as long as you've got a veteran that's going to start from day one, he wouldn't have to be ready for camp per se. Just learn the playbook, you know, start getting a feel for the offense, and then use him in December.
You have Mixon. I mean, he's your backup running back. And again, it's a 4-year commitment. If he missed the first 4 weeks, I'm still okay with drafting him in the second round. If he's somebody who can live up to a first round, great. Here are the other running backs in the taken in the second round in the last 5 years. So, like, these are comparable players. And maybe even Brooks is slightly better of a prospect since we're talking about him as a late first rounder if he was healthy. 2021, we mentioned Javonte Williams. 2020 had 4 second round running backs. DeAndre Swift, he's been all right. He's been all right. He's not been terrible. Jonathan Taylor?
He's pretty damn good.
Should have been a first rounder over Clyde, but yeah.
Jonathan Taylor, not bad, huh?
Yeah.
Cam Akers? Like, if he didn't have the injury, probably fine, but he had the injury.
He's had some moments.
He's had some moments. The injury's kind of derailed his career.
And then he got sideways with
Sean McVay.
With
McVay.
J.K. Dobbins, who, again, has been just good,
except
with
for the injuries.
But he's been good. A.J. Dillon, he's been a backup running back for
majority. He split time, but there are times that he looks really, really good as the power back. And then last year, when he had a big opportunity,
he
was terrible.
I thought his rookie year and even the second year, he looked pretty good as the complimentary guy to Aaron Jones. But, yeah, this last year, he looked awful.
And he had a chance to really do something last year, and he didn't.
And then Miles Sanders was the only second-round running back in 19. So in the last 5 years, there's been 11 second-round running backs. Zach Charbonnet, Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker, James Cook, Javonte Williams, DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, A.J. Dillon, Miles Sanders. That's a pretty good list.
Who's the worst amongst that group? Dillon?
Might be A.J. Dillon.
Yeah, for sure.
Be Dillon. Now, Charbonnet. Charbonnet hasn't done anything. Yeah.
Yeah, he hadn't done much. And if you throw injury in there, I guess you could say, you know, Akers, Dobbins, just because they haven't given you the ROI. Like, they've had flashes, but they've been hurt and haven't given you the volume. But this is like the type of player you're talking about when you're saying running back in the second round. If Jonathan Brooks is there at 42, I'm not going to like say I'm banging the table and standing on the table for Jonathan Brooks. But if Nick Castillo, I'm going to say this right now, because drafting a running back in the second round is going to catch a lot of backlash. It will catch a lot of frustration. I think it will catch a lot of frustration from the fan base. Maybe they'll be excited because he's a local kid and he's a running back and he's a skill position player. I don't know. If Jonathan Brooks is the pick at 42, I'm going to applaud Nick Caserio. I'm going to be totally okay with the idea of Jonathan Brooks at number 42.
So the way I look at it is what we talked about earlier when we were talking about this scenario with holes still to fill. I fully expect the second round, and with guys sliding and the possibility to get a possible first-round talent in the second round, that they're going to be looking at either defensive tackle or corner. But if you're going to go that route, then the way I would answer that question is, if that's what you're going to do, sure, that's exciting, but then which had the better crew of guys that were still on the open market from a veteran free agent perspective that you could still bring in here to fill a role?
Give me your top running back.
So I was Googling the...
I feel better about the free agent safeties than I would the running backs.
Absolutely.
Safeties for sure. And you've already done enough with the free agent corners that just tells me that you're just going to go with who you got. But then defensive tackle, I don't know that there's anybody that's going to, you know...
I think they're kind of set at defensive tackle. I feel like they are.
Unless someone slides to them at 42 that they don't expect to be there, I think they're probably going to roll with what they have at defensive tackle, for better or worse.
Maybe we'll do predictions later this week about on Friday, maybe like how people are going to feel come Monday with the Texans draft.
Mm-hmm.
My top one is going to be that they're frustrated that the Texans didn't address defensive tackle. I have a feeling that they're fine with Foley and they're fine with Settle.
So, see, that's the thing.
I think they're fine.
The fans are going to have a hard time digesting that because they're not familiar enough with Foley and Settle to realize that in the building, within the coaching staff and the general manager, they're pretty satisfied with getting those two guys on the roster. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. I think there could be a level of disappointment not addressing or a need that the fans think that they have that I think in the building they don't think that they need to.
Tyler and Conroe wouldn't take Blake Corum. He reminds me of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's an interesting comp because Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a first-rounder and Corum's probably a fourth at best.
I would say fourth-rounder. Fourth.
Josh from Seabrook, I want to agree with you all with taking a running back in the second round, but I feel like we have bigger needs between defensive tackle, corner, and safety. It's what Blankers was mentioning. Keith from L.A., Kyron Williams, a fifth-round pick.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but it wasn't safe. Like you said, you're not pounding on the table for Jonathan Brooks.
No, if Brooks is there at 42 and they pass on him for a corner, defensive tackle, a safety, okay, all right. I trust Caserio, best player available. But if he is the pick at 42, I'm cool with it. I will not send off a negative tweet if that's what happens.
Yeah, I wouldn't crap on it because I think at this point you have to trust that Casario's talent evaluation and with D'Amico and those two guys together, they know what they want. They know there's a certain type of guy to fit the system at every position group. And if they go get a running back and they feel like for Bobby Slowick's offense, this is an extra wrinkle that they didn't already have on the roster and it gives you the depth you need, I'm fine with that. I have to trust them at this point.
Yeah, I think it to me would, and this is not to state the obvious, but it's entirely dependent on who's there. Like, if you're telling me in the scenario where Jonathan Brooks is the best player available, sure. The problem is there's obviously four positions I'd like to see them address before running back being, you know, left guard, safety, corner, and defensive tackle. And I'm with you, Jeremy. I don't think they actually will address defensive tackle. So it's entirely dependent on who's there. But I think there is, you know, more than a few scenarios where Jonathan Brooks ends up being, you know, best player available at 42. And then I can get on board with it if you then address needs with the other second round pick in your third.
So if Wheatstraw and Kool-Aid, Johnny Football and the D-tackle from Michigan are all sitting there.
Who is Wheatstraw? Rakestraw. You're talking about our text to Wheatstraw.
Yeah, I mixed it. Because I was looking at text, yeah. So if Rakestraw and Kool-Aid are there,
yeah,
and Johnny Football from Illinois, the defensive tackle, and defensive tackle, Brooks, and Brooks is there.
If Brooks is the pick, I would be okay with it.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd prefer one of those four names over Jonathan Brooks. I wouldn't light the world on fire or go day that lives in infamy as Jeremy did last year. But
for the rest of the NFL, you didn't finish.
I'd be mildly annoyed, but I'd understand it. And he's a Longhorn, so I couldn't be too upset.
See, I wouldn't be as jazzed about that. I wouldn't be excited about that because you had guys that were early, at least early in the process and throughout the process, were evaluated to be first-round picks that were sliding down to your first, second-round pick to where you could get a position of need and a guy that was rated pretty high as best player available.
I will say, though, and this thought kind of just popped in my head as Jeremy was running down the list of running backs that were taken in the second round, and maybe there is something to this because in the second round at running back, you're taking the top of the top, whereas the other positions like corner and D-tackle, these other positions we're talking about, mm-hmm. you're not taking at the top of the position once you're into the second round. So maybe that's why the hit rate, as we saw, I think you went back to 2019.
The last 5 years, 2019.
Yeah, so what we saw there, maybe, and it's just as simple an answer as you're taking from the very top of the position at running back in the second round, your hit rate is higher because you're taking at the very top instead of at D tackle, at corner, maybe you're taking five or six deep into the positional ranking. So if you're telling me my hit rate is higher by taking running back, and it seems to what Jeremy pointed out or what he talked about kind of points that out, then I think that brings me a little bit over to the side. At least with that second round pick, your first pick in the draft, maybe you're more guaranteed to hit on that player if you take running back.
Think about this, too. You would now have young players, and I'm not going to count Mixon here because I think Mixon's really – his three-year deal is really a two-year deal. And Nico's not under contract beyond this season. But you would have a young trio around C.J. Stroud of Tank Dell, Jonathan Brooks, if you do re-sign Nico Collins. That's pretty dangerous.
I think that
you need offense to win nowadays in the NFL. We've done the studies on this. There hasn't been a Super Bowl winner, like I can't remember the exact one, but like the last 10 years-ish, you've had to have been in the top 10 in offense in the NFL to win the Super Bowl. There's been teams that have been outside of the top 10 in defense that have won the Super Bowl. It is imperative to have a top 10 offense if you want to be a Super Bowl champion. And if you're telling me that you can pair Brooks with Tank, the flexibility to bring back Nico Collins all around your franchise quarterback, why wouldn't you do that?
It brings your entire skill set up an extra notch, right? Because you know the guys that are under contract right now with Mixon and with Schultz. You have the option of either one of those guys playing wide receiver one, even if you're going a little older and you re-sign Diggs because Nico somehow gets away from you. The fact that you can give him all those weapons that are upper echelon weapons at every single position group with skill to where he can utilize them for the foreseeable future, that's what you have to do. You owe that to him. You owe it to the franchise because that's what makes it all go. That's what makes this team a potential Super Bowl caliber mm-hmm. team every single year.
Bold move, but I like bold moves. Just like I like the Texans traded up for Will Anderson last year. All right, 713-780-3776.
Such a liar.
What is your mailbag question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. You can ask us whatever you want. Whatever you want to ask us. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I know you've been thinking about turf for your yard. Everybody thinks about it. Whether it's because you're tired of mowing, want to spend your time elsewhere, it's easier to maintain, it's nicer, better for the kids, better for the pets, whatever your reason, I know you've been thinking about it. And if you've been thinking about it, you need to reach out to Sinlawn. Why not? Sinlawn will give you a free consultation, free estimate, and then you can decide. But at least know your options. Options are the key to life. Why wouldn't you know? Sinlawn's product is the best in the game. Top-of-the-line products that are made in the USA. Lifetime warranty, in-house crews. You don't have to worry about the nightmares of a work that's contracted out. That's always annoying. We've all had those nightmare stories. You don't want that work contracted out. Sinlawn doesn't have that with their in-house crews. They're also fully insured. They're fully bonded, and their customer service is elite. Sinlawn created the industry. They're the sister company to AstroTurf, you know, the stuff in the dome. Sinlawn has nearly two decades in the game, the only turf company in Texas that can say that. Go to 975sinlawn.com to learn more. That's 975sinlawn.com, 975sinlawn.com, and improve your yard today. The greenest turf company, not just in color, but also in theory. Sinlawn, get your weekends back.
Mail call.
It's a mailbag Monday with a Killer Bee.
You've got mail.
What's your question for the Bees? Mailbag Monday, 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Which run is more impressive, Scottie Scheffler's run or Nelly Korda's run?
Wow.
Which one is more impressive?
She's won five in a row, right?
Scheffler, she's won five in a row. Scheffler's won four in a row. The only one he didn't win, he's tied for second.
I think it's Scotty Scheffler.
Sexist.
I think what he's doing right now is... Not that they're both not impressive.
No, it's a sexist answer, quite frankly.
Because
Nelly, what is one? Scheffler hasn't done anything that Nelly Korda hasn't. Nelly Korda
won a major.
She won a major. She's won five in a row. Scotty Scheffler's won four. Also, the gap between Korda and the world number two is the same gap between two and 183. Her gap is equal from one to two is two and 183. Scotty Scheffler's is pretty good, but it only goes to about 82. His gap over 2 is equivalent to 2 over 82. Nelly Korda is more dominant in his current 5 golf tournament run. The only reason you would say Scotty Scheffler is because you're a sexist.
Sexist. I'll be honest. It's because I didn't hear about I didn't know who Korda was until about 5 seconds ago.
Oh, that's great, Ryan.
I'll flat out admit it.
I didn't know who she was until she won yesterday. Yeah, I'm not going to lie either.
Okay, so there we go. You said you got about 24
it up on
hours
the show
on
last week that her bloodlines are unbelievable.
I did not know.
Wait,
that.
Bloodline?
Her bloodline. Nelly Korda's bloodlines are unbelievable.
Acknowledge me.
Her dad was a top 20 tennis player. So is mom. One brother is playing college tennis at Stanford. The other one is already on the pro tour. And then she's the number one golfer in the world. That's a pretty solid family resume.
Didn't she have some health adversity too?
That I don't know.
I think that she did. I think she had some health adversity and now she's like back and doing great or whatever. Yeah, her run's incredible. I mean, we're seeing some really good golf on the women's side and the men's side. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Bees? Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Alex, you're in the Hive. What's your question for the Killer Bees? Okay, see you later, Alex. 2010, excited for Happy Gilmore 2 coming out on Netflix?
No.
Hey, I'm excited. I'll watch it.
Yeah. I think most of the what do you call it, the redos.
Yeah, they're not very good.
They're not very good.
No, it was a perfect movie. I didn't think it needed a sequel. I feel like kind of like Anchorman, Zoolander, those that need sequels.
I didn't see Zoolander 2.
It was awful.
I couldn't stomach watching Zoolander. That was a tough watch.
I don't like stupid funny. Zoolander's about the only stupid funny I can do. I actually like Zoolander.
Get crushed for this one too. But Zoolander.
Oh, you don't even like the original.
I don't like Zoolander. I don't like Napoleon Dynamite. I don't like Groundhog Day. Those were like to me. I was like, nope, just can't do it.
Well, now we're spanning generations here. Going from
I'm just giving you a wide variety of the kind of. I can't do it.
What is this? A center for ants? We trusted. I'm sitting in my truck like, dang, I'm getting drafted. You wish, Weech.
Yeah, you're welcome. My bad.
What about Montez Sweat if he falls to 42?
I think he's too hot.
I think so, too. I'm out on Sweat, actually.
I think he'll fall to the third round.
I've been talking to perennial draft experts, and I'm out on Sweat.
Is that because of the technique?
No.
And the size?
I don't love the off the field. Okay. I don't love the off the field. Heavy, drinking while driving.
Oh, you're talking about Devondre Sweat.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said Montez Sweat. I've been confused this entire time.
Montez Sweat's already signed.
Well, the text said Montez Sweat. Okay. That's why I got confused. But yeah, Devondre. I'm out. Sorry. Eric the Driver, what's y'all's earliest sports memory?
Well, I tell you what, Babe Ruth's final season, he was still really solid, and I couldn't believe that even before Joey Chestnut, he could still eat a boatload of hot dogs.
Well done. Well done. That's two today. Yeah. That's two today.
He still rode the train, too, to every road trip to game. It still was good.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Huh. The more you know. I
guess it depends playing or watching. I mean, they're different.
I mean, I grew up watching sports with my... You know, my family.
The funny thing, the rumor in my family, this is like the legend of the blank family, is that my mom and dad owned and operated their own restaurant for 16 years. At the restaurant when I was 2, that I could recite the Packers, they say roster. My dad said maybe starting lineup. I don't know that 2 years old I could do that, but that would be one that would be a memory if I could remember it, and I can't remember.
Yeah, my mom says I learned how to read by reading the sports page. Like, I would sit in the middle of the sports page and get all that ink over me. I'm going to have cancer when I'm 55. My earliest memory of an Astro was Glenn Davis, for whatever reason. That was probably, what, late 80s? 89, maybe? He played first. He was the first baseman for Bagwell.
Yep.
So I would have been like 4. My first memory of a basketball player, I remember going to the Summit with Uncle Barney quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been Akeem. Akeem might have been my first memory of a Rocket player. My first memory of an Oiler, I guess the Warren Moon Oilers.
Yeah.
I guess the Warren Moon Oilers.
Same era for me. I think like the first time I remember like living and dying, you know, relatively speaking, when you're young, it's not really living and dying. But with the playoff series was when the Rockets got knocked out by the Sonics.
Yeah.
I guess that was a year or 2 years before they won the title. And then I saw some Oilers games in the Dome. Like I saw the same year they lost to the Bills in the 35-3 just soul-crushing defeat. They beat the Bills in a regular season game that I was at. So I remember that. I remember seeing Doug Drabik at the pitch at the Astrodome. Those are probably some of my earliest memories.
Yeah. We would go to the Dome a lot. We'd watch Astros.
I remember seeing Kevin Bass play at the Dome.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah.
We would go to the Astrodome and watch Houston Cougar football back then.
Yeah, I remember going to County Stadium, Packers-Bears, when the Packers still played two home games a year in Milwaukee, and Packers-Bears at like 27 below zero and sitting in the bleachers of the outfield of County Stadium to watch Packers-Bears.
They took two games out of Lambeau each year?
Yeah, each year.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That is wild.
When did that stop?
In the last 10 years, I think.
Do you remember?
Because they call it the Milwaukee tickets. The Milwaukee tickets, they were...
Regular season?
They were still a deal.
Wow. Do you remember when the Rockets basketball playoff games were on pay-per-view?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember like being very, very young.
It was like the first round. Because once they got to the... I think it's once they got
round.
To the
National
second
TV
round, it was on TV. But yeah, first round matchups a lot of time were on pay-per-view.
And you remember whenever you were a kid, you could put it on the pay-per-view channel.
And it was scrambled.
But yeah. You could still kind of every now and then see pictures. You can hear it a little bit. Yep. People use it for other things. I remember watching Rocket playoff basketball on the pay-per-view channel that was scrambled.
See, in Milwaukee, they never did that, but I can say that I was part of the reason why that a lot of teams started doing that, because in Portland, they did it, but they did it at the bars, and they did it, and the bars had to pay, and they did it at home, and they were the only game in town in Portland, Oregon, and everybody just said, it sucks, but we're paying it. And so other NBA teams tried to piggyback on it and try and do it, and then they realized it ain't going to work in a city where they've got multiple sports teams and they're going to really hate you for doing it.
3311 Blankers, what's your best Vernon Maxwell story?
I don't think I can tell that on the air. There's a few I can't tell on the air.
What's your favorite radio?
How far down the list of stories do you have to go before you get to one that's radio friendly?
Give me the 24th best story.
I in the back of the plane one night, there were nights when the back of the plane, I'm not going to get into all the, we had names for the different front, middle, back of the plane, everything, but the back of the plane was always very, very alive and awake no matter what time of day or night it was. And Vernon would tell stories he loved to pick on Sam Cassell, and Sam really wouldn't fight back a whole lot. I just remember Vernon just needling Sam, and us would go, we would duck down the broadcasters below the seat so we could laugh. He's like, "Damn, Sam, look at your head. You look like a fish. You got eyes on the side of your head. All you need is some gills and some fins, and you can swim." And we had, you know, there's some colorful language in there, and we were just like, "Oh my God, he's killing him."
Vernon, that's exactly how Vernon talks.
Oh, I could do Vernon with the cuss words, because that time we had him on the air, he dropped at least 17.
I don't think you hear anything we were saying. All right, let's rapid fire these to get through them. Did you stay up to watch the Chinese Grand Prix?
Nope.
No.
I didn't either. Who won, Verstappen?
That's a no-brainer.
Can you play first base?
I played it before growing up.
I can. Better than a Abreu? Probably not. What's your favorite cut of steak, and how do you like it cooked?
New York strip, medium.
Jeez, Brian, jump in front of Blankers here?
Filet.
With or without ketchup?
Without. Medium well filet.
Medium well?
I'm not changing
my
opinion
for you.
Why don't
you just burn the piece of meat?
No, that would be well.
Medium rare. I like a filet. I also like a...
Ribeye.
It depends on where I'm going, because some places have better fillets. Some places have better ribeyes. Bone in ribeye too. You get the extra flavor because the bone marrow cooks into it while it's cooking. What is better? Whopper from Burger King or Big Mac from McDonald's?
That's a no brainer. It's the Whopper, because the flame grill has a better flavor to it.
I'm Whopper too. Sopranos or The Wire?
Sopranos.
The Wire.
Sure.
The Wire.
Have you seen either?
No.
If you were forced to move to one of the other three large metros in Texas, which would it be? San Antonio, Austin, or Dallas-Fort Worth?
Oh, wow.
Not Dallas.
No, it's probably Austin.
Yeah, I'd lean Austin, but I'd be fine in San Antonio, too.
San Antonio's
just not Dallas.
Boring as hell.
I would move to the Hill Country of San Antonio. In fact, I want to make enough money in my life to retire to the Hill Country in San Antonio and never talk to a human being again in my life.
I could see
that.
That
is my goal.
Yeah, I could
golf in the Hill Country.
I love the Hill Country.
Yeah, we used to play golf there a lot when we went to San Antonio. But Austin, if you can afford it, Austin's beautiful.
Once I hit my number to be financially independent, retire early, I'm out of here, guys. Never going to hear from me again. I'm going to go off the grid. Off the grid.
Or you just want to chill?
Just a little chill. I don't want to. You want me on a tractor? Like,
it's not Roy Oswalt.
Yeah. What is it called whenever you spin the hay together? Baling hay. I don't want to. I'm not going to be baling hay. I'm going to go.
You just want to bail.
I'm going to have enough money to build a house, live comfortably for the rest of my life, and go there to die. And never talk to anybody ever again. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Thank you, Hi, for your participation. The streets on Twitter are saying that Dusty Baker would have this team playing well. Do we agree? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Word up. 2 for 5's over here, baby. Word up. 2 for 5's.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
How long is Brian going to let this ride? Lyrics is a clean version. Do you know? He's rolling the dice.
Yeah, I would.
He's
yeah.
rolling the dice. I just wanted to let it go on and on. Oh, he got out, dumped out quick. He was real.
No,
quick
I didn't think
out.
That was the lyrical because I had a musical version in here, and apparently he got replaced with one with lyrics. So I'm not gambling.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't blame you. I don't blame you at all. The streets on Twitter are saying that Dusty would have this team playing well. Do we agree?
I disagree with that.
We've got a couple of texts already today, earlier, and yeah. I saved them for this segment. 60-30, there's no bleeping way. Y'all can't see that Espada is too inept to run this team. Was a bench coach for all those years for a reason. Probably Dusty's fault, I'm sure. I didn't hate Dusty's final year. Keith from L.A., what point do you start to realize it's time for a mix-up for the Astros? If this was Dusty Baker, the city would have protested to get a fire, to maybe get him fired. So how long is Joe Espada's leash? So, you know, we've already got a couple texts unprovoked on this. 713-780-3776. Is this Espada's fault? If Dusty Baker was here, would this team be playing well?
This is not Espada's fault at all. And the fact is, we can nitpick little things early in the first game of the season, and you know, whether you use Hader in a non-safe situation or not. But the fact is, the players have to play. And Dusty Baker would be going to the same exact players that we're seeing Joe Espada go to. And he might be going to Abreu even more because of the fact that he had such a belief and stay loyal to his veteran players and the backs of their baseball cards. So I don't think, as much as everybody wants to go at the low-hanging fruit, oh, you got a new manager, it's his first time on the job, he's probably to blame for at least a good portion of why this team isn't playing well. No, it's not playing well because the guys that play aren't playing well. This is not on Joe Espada right now. This is on all the guys that aren't doing their job that we've highlighted throughout this show and since the season started and they started playing bad. This is the back of your bullpen. This is Jose Abreu. This is Alex Bregman. And the list goes, Chaz McCormick. The list goes on and on for guys that are underachieving and not performing.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. I don't think Espada has been perfect. No. I think there's some things that I've looked at from Espada that I don't love. There's been some people that have been critical of his lineup construction, which I think is a fair point. I don't necessarily care about batting orders much. I think they're extremely overrated. But some people point to that, and I do think it's fair. And to those people's credit, the stats right now do back up their point. Like, you're high in OPS, you're high in hits, you're below average in runs. So that does back up their point. But your key pieces, like you said, are not performing well. Whenever you have your big free agent signing Josh Hader pitching to an 8.38 ERA and blowing save and blowing save and blowing save, it's not something you can really outmanage, at least from first pitch to last out. Brian Abreu, one of your top guys, has an ERA right around 5. Ryan Pressly, 8.31 ERA. You've had the injuries. Fromber still on the IL. Yep. Justin Verlander started the year on the IL. Christian Javier just landed on the IL. And then you've had some key pieces offensively that have been not good. Alex Bregman has been your 3 or 4 hole hitter all year, mostly 4 hole, and he's hitting .213 with a .582 OPS. Chaz McCormick, who everybody thought was going to have a really good season after having a good year last year, has been bad up until this series, and he's got it the average up to 262, not awful. Jake Myers, your everyday center fielder, has been like not very good offensively to the point where he can't be your everyday outfielder. And then Jose Abreu's literally on pace to nearly double the worst season for a position player in Major League Baseball history. So from first pitch to last pitch, I don't think that Dusty Baker would be doing a whole lot differently than Joe Espada is doing that would lead to a better record. Now, one thing that I would argue for from the Dusty Baker side is Dusty Baker put in Chaz McCormick, maybe get some hot. What is Alex Bregman's favorite food? I don't know, that terrible salsa that he makes that he changed the name on it because it was doing bad numbers and not selling. Maybe he would bring him some salsa. Like, that's the stuff I wonder what's going on in the clubhouse, because on the field, like, the product has been bad. I don't think it's Joe Espada's fault. But the clubhouse stuff is where Dusty Baker I thought was great, where we have no idea what Joe Espada is yet.
No, but the one thing that the caveat I was also going to add that you brought up is that if you take a manager, I don't care if it's Joe Espada, I don't care if it's, you know, whoever your favorite manager of all time is, and say, take a team and on paper going into the regular season, right before your eyes, take the top three starters that are going to be your starters in your rotation that are also going to be above average starters in baseball and in your league, and just basically take them away. And say, deal with it until that time where you can start seeing them come back, and it'll happen over time, but you don't know when. And then couple that with all the shortcomings offensively with guys you were expecting, you know, to at least do what they did the year before or somewhere close to it, and they haven't. I don't think any manager taking over this team to start this season that is forced to deal with those situations are going to have much better results. I just don't.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN. Joe Espada, Dusty Baker. Would Dusty Baker have this team playing better ball? And how bad – I've seen some people start to say this too, that Espada needs to be let go. How bad does it have to be to seriously consider moving on from Espada? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Look, if you haven't joined the club at Texas Star Grill Shop, you're missing out. You've heard everybody talk about this club, and this club is fantastic. Head to 975grills.com right now to join, or just mention the club when you go into any of their four Houston locations. As a member of the club, what will this club get you? I'm about to tell you. You'll enjoy special in-store discounts that can't be found anywhere else. The best products in the outdoor cooking world at Texas Star Grill Shop, and they're giving you prices that you won't see anywhere when you join the club or mention the club. From Traeger to Weber to Napoleon, they have it all. Wood pellet, charcoal, gas, everything. Outdoor pizza ovens, that sounds great. Flat top grills, I love those. Whatever you want, and they'll beat any price for a club member, 975grills.com. Stop falling for the trick of walking into the big box stores, purchasing that first grill you see. Shop at Texas Grill Shop and educate yourself in the grill game. If you're going to buy a grill in this town, you want to talk to them first. Full free installation. Don't have to worry about 100 pieces in assembly, a box unloaded on your driveway. Full free assembly and delivery for club members from start to finish. Texas Star Grill Shop will be there for you. How about the outdoor kitchen? 975grills.com. Best in the business, and club members will get special pricing on custom outdoor kitchen with free consultation. The stuff they can do is incredible, too, by the way. Join the club right now and take advantage of these deals. 975grills.com, 975grills.com for the best barbecue grills at the best price.